I'm sorry, are you guys discussing the case?
No.
No.
I'm discussing legislation.
Oh,
but
oh,
not
yes.
The case.
Yes. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, all right, we're back in open session. All right, so we did not have, did we have any questions?
Yes.
Good.
Mark, I know what happens in the closed session is confidential, but anyway,
okay.
I'm concerned that what was referenced by Mr. Stoll does not apply in this case.
So do we have any other questions before we deliberate?
I will ask once again, are there any policies in here that you can point to that apply to the treatment of animals, more specifically incapacitated, postoperative?
No, that is all in training. There's nothing like, there's no subsection about postoperative training. It's just the on-site training that occurs through the surgery lead.
Is there a reason you didn't reference the treatment of the animal in the performance improvement plan for the specific employee?
It was discussed. It just wasn't documented in there.
Thank you.
I have no more questions.
All right. Okay, so this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Jane, I was just going to mention, in the information you were given, and I understand clearly that's a handbook with like an add-on handbook, so I will just kind of address, at least from the HR point of view, that's going to be your people part, and then your practice policies and procedures are going to be completely separate, so that you won't find your animal handling in there. It would be separate policies and procedures that they would provide. So just a clarification on that, why she couldn't produce it in that document. And then as far as conversation that we might have, I think the biggest thing to me is not educating the client in this situation. I get that things are really uncomfortable whenever something unfortunate happens, right? But the thing is that you work with people. People are going to make errors and mistakes, and I think probably the most difficult part about being a responsible veterinarian is that you can't be there all the time, right?
Sure.
And you have to trust your team, and I think that she felt very comfortable in the policies and procedures that she had and the training that she had and the team that she had, because obviously if she didn't, she would have terminated those team members, right? So there was something there that she felt like she could rehabilitate. But what I heard in her testimony back was, I didn't want to tell the pet owner because I didn't want the pet owner to get upset,
right,
and possibly retaliate or, you know, sue or, you know, whatever
I would
term.
Complain.
So the thing is, again, to me, I think that's part of our statutes is the being considerate of the pet owner and, you know, your patients and stuff. And right, and our job as the board, as far as our mission is, you know, to protect the public and the welfare of animals, right? So again, I just think to me that was the part that was the part that tugged on me. The social media part, you got to be really careful with that. The NLRB stuff with chilling effect, you know, like trying to tell people they absolutely can't do something. You know, you can guide them and say you really shouldn't, and here's why, right? And this is what, you know, this is what our procedures are for our business and our practices. And like Dr. James was saying, veterinary medicine has expanded tremendously because of the tools that we have, and there's a lot of apps that help generationally for our team members, right? So you've got calculators, the respondent referenced plums, right? There's so many really valuable things. So phones are not inherently bad, right? They can actually be really good, but then the phone is what caught the thing that shouldn't have happened, right? So trying to get rid of phones doesn't mean you get rid of the issue systemically. So again, I think that that's been acknowledged in this case, but almost, you know, I think there's still some things that should be addressed. And so, you know, as far as like the CE that had been proposed, I don't think it's a bad thing to understand more about client communication and difficult conversations and social media stuff, because it exists and it will continue to exist, and being a responsible veterinarian is hard. And if it was easy, everybody would do it, right? But it's hard, and kudos for wanting to do it. Hopefully that's why you do it. And you're going to learn and grow a lot, because people make our job the most interesting part of what we do in veterinary medicine, let's be honest, right? The patient part is the easy part. So anyways, that's just where I was coming from. So that's what I'm saying is I think there are some issues that should be addressed. Now, how might be something that other board members feel differently about.
Yeah, I think continuing education would be very beneficial in this aspect of dealing with the policies, making sure they're specific enough. You know, the performance review was conducted, I believe, by Dr. Zenko. Not by HR, but correct me if I'm wrong.
There's a practice manager as well.
Okay. The practice manager, okay, yeah. Who is also unregulated. So I think the CE would be very beneficial. There's no civil penalty. It's a learning opportunity. So based on that, this is...
Again, we can't really reference something that we offered previously because that doesn't exist anymore. So I just have to talk about
I'm just going to chime in here. Oh,
again,
go ahead.
We don't really have a motion.
Right, before we get to, we're kind of getting to the conclusion when we really need to talk about, you know, are you going to find, you know, a violation of your statute? And if so, then you've got to articulate the facts. And then it comes back to you next month for you to consider about
So, and I think if anyone remembers back to when we discussed this originally, I think I was probably saying the same thing then that I'm going to say now. But I feel like the responsible veterinarian sets the foundation of the policies and procedures. I think they guide, especially in corporate practices, the decisions and the setup of the premise and how the premise operates to make sure it's in accordance with our statutes and rules. And I think they help with training of associates and all those things. And I have heard in testimony and in the information provided that all those things were being done. I think where we're trying to decide is when you have an unlicensed person make a really bad decision, is that responsible vet responsible for that decision? And I would say, in a case-by-case situation, had this vet not have done all the things, had not had the policies in place, had not done a reprimand, had not done all the things that we would expect a good, responsible veterinarian to do, then I would say, yes, she's accountable for it. But in this case, I'm struggling to find it. I really am. I'm struggling to find where this responsible veterinarian fell below what we would expect of a responsible veterinarian. And if we're going to start saying that they have to make good judgment for every associate in their practice, we're going to set ourselves up for a world of hurt, because nobody can do that. You just can't do that. It's not reasonable. And so I really fundamentally go back to, I don't believe that I can find a violation for this responsible veterinarian.
Then we have the issue that we all feel there was a fairly egregious behavior.
Yeah.
Somebody has to be responsible.
Right.
We always struggle with this when it's not a CBT. This is going to come up time and time again.
Exactly.
So that's the question, is responsibility here.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If the policies and the procedures were in place, how is the responsible veterinarian, in this case, responsible?
Well, and the person that's responsible
for
are the technicians that were involved. And while we don't regulate them, they did have a performance improvement plan or whatever you call it. I don't even know what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Disciplinary action.
Right.
That is where the responsibility lies with the practice to discipline the associates that were involved in the decisions that they
mm-hmm.
made. That is the responsibility. It sucks that it's not a higher level, and it sucks that we don't have control over that, but I just don't see how we do. And when you look at responsible veterinarians, they don't manage these employees. They're not involved in that. They're not HR experts. It just isn't reasonable. So I stand behind, I just don't see a violation here in this case.
Dr. James, unfortunately, in the performance improvement plan, there is no mention of the treatment of the animal. It's focused on the social media aspect, and that's where I feel the point is being missed.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that you could go back and say, could that have been written better? Could, I mean, there are things that you could do differently, but ultimately, they were held accountable to it, and it is in their practices and their core values to say that is not how we treat patients in this hospital. And I can't imagine that did not come up in the performance discussion outside of just the social media piece. So that's where I go, yeah, I mean, it wasn't documented, but I believe it happened, and that's what we do here a lot, is what we believe happened and if we agree with it. So, I mean, I guess I would be happy to make a motion in the case of 24-136 that we find no violations.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. I would agree, other than I'd make a modification for a letter of concern to, again, I think the pet owner has the right to know.
I would definitely go along with a letter of concern that the pet owner, in my mind, should have been informed. But what I would say is I can understand the reasoning as to why this pet owner was not informed. And so I don't necessarily feel like it's an ethical violation, but a letter of concern and saying that, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about this. This was out on social media. You never know when we've had these cases before where owners see it way late and somebody shares with them that they saw it or whatever, and it really bites you in the, you know what, not to have been forthcoming, right? So sure. A letter of concern on that certainly is reasonable. So I can modify my motion to find no violations and issue a letter of concern with regards to the practice informing the owner of what had occurred.
So I'll second that.
Okay, a motion, a second. We don't need a roll call this week.
It's
first. All right, so we have a motion and a second to find no violation and issue a letter of concern. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. So that concludes this matter. And Dr. Zenko, you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we should.